Good afternoon. It's Friday, July 29th. This is Chickie Fitzgerald with the Executive Girlfriend. How about if I start that over again? Chickie Fitzgerald with the Executive Girlfriends Group. And it is my pleasure today to introduce you to our guest, Deborah Bailey. And Deborah has written a book called Think Like an Entrepreneur. And I do that without thinking, so it will be fun to hear about your book and why you wrote it. But first, Deborah, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I want to say also thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and to speak with you. I am a writer, first and foremost, and also I am a coach, communications expert, and wearing many hats as an entrepreneur, which I really love that I can describe myself as more than one thing. But I love to give presentations to women, particularly who want to go into business or make the transition out of corporate, and just help to prepare them for the path. Now that everything has changed so much around us, I feel that, you know, those people who have been through a transition can really be the teachers and helpers to others who want to know if they want to take this leap. So
Absolutely.
That's pretty much how I describe what I do. But as I said, I'm a writer at heart, so I'm so glad I'm able to use my writing skills as well as my coaching skills.
Well, I love the tagline for this book, which talks about transforming your career and taking charge of your life. And, Deborah, I spent the early part of my career, actually the first half of my 30-year career was in corporate America, but most of that was starting up businesses within businesses. So, you know, I kind of found out later that I actually was an entrepreneur and that I was the internal consultant who was doing that. And a lot of our members are in corporate America. And, you know, I think that folks who are in that corporate environment can also benefit from the very things that you're talking about in this book. So thinking like an entrepreneur isn't just planning for going out on your own. You know, I think what I'd like to talk about today is how it also applies to people who actually are quite comfortable in a corporate environment, particularly with at least a fairly predictable paycheck, and maybe aren't willing to take that plunge right now. But let's just dive right in. So clearly you wrote the book for to help women take charge of where they are, and if they wanted to be off on their own independently, that really was your intended audience. Is that right?
Yes, actually. I had gone through a transition myself in corporate world for about 20 years, and I worked with AT&T and Johnson & Johnson and Lucent and all these very large companies, and I realized I wanted to make a change in what I was doing. And back when I got out of college, I wanted to go in business for myself, but at that time, I really didn't know anyone else who had done that. And I wasn't encouraged to do it at that time because the idea was to go into a company, stay there until retirement, and get a pension. So I, you know, I took some time and I went into fashion, worked in the garment district, worked as a copywriter, did some other things for a while. And then I kind of decided, well, I'm just going to go follow along with all my friends who are in corporate, and they have more money. So I guess they were really right and I was wrong. So I, you know, I followed that path, and then for a while I liked it. It was very interesting to learn something new because I transitioned from copywriting into IT, which was totally to the left brain side of things. And at first I really liked it, but after a while I realized that it wasn't quite the place for me, but I hung in there because I didn't know what else to do at that point. But eventually I decided I have to move on, and I planned to do that. It took about a year to prepare myself for that. So coming out into the, you could say, entrepreneurial world and looking at how I could support myself and really understand what that meant was a big mindset shift. And I just started writing about how I felt about it, and I had a coaching newsletter where I wrote different things that I include in the book. And I said, you know, I want to put this together and get it out here because I've always wanted to write a book. Though I thought that my first book would be a novel, I was never intending to write nonfiction, but it just seemed like I just wanted to say these things. So I put them out there more for the person in corporate who says, how can I treat my career, you know, as an entrepreneur within the company, But I found that a lot of people outside of corporate and even people going through life transitions have given me a lot of good feedback about it. So I think sometimes you think your audience is one group, but it turns out that it connects with other people after other people pick it up and start letting you know how they felt about it.
Right, right. Well, as I said, it really resonated with me because while I have spent the last 15 years thinking I was an entrepreneur, I actually didn't become an entrepreneur until I stepped off of the precipice of going from a service-oriented business into a product-oriented business. And I just had lunch with someone today who is thinking about leaving her corporate job and wanted some advice about that. And I said, when you just go out into a service business, such as consulting, it actually, particularly if you can go out and have a couple of clients already in the wings, it doesn't feel so different. You work as much. You maybe have more flexibility because you're working from home initially. But when you're actually starting a company where you have to raise capital and you've got payroll have to pay payroll with MasterCard and Visa, it gets very, very different. So let's dive right in and talk about the success traits of an entrepreneur. What do you think people need to look at within themselves to see if they even have what it takes?
Well, for me, looking at the traits that I had to use and also interacting with other entrepreneurs once I came out, one thing I realized was that I am an entrepreneur and probably always have that mindset, but didn't know how to apply it. And I think what I really found out after coming out was that people who have these ideas and creativity and they're willing to take risks, all these different things seem to be traits that are also true of more very creative people. So I said, is it just that maybe it's all really these general traits that people have who can really step out here and have these big ideas and see them through? So when I looked at it, I looked at vision, because if you really don't know where you're going, they say, how can you get there? You have to have an idea of what you want to create in the first place. And I think often people are daydreaming, and I've done my share of that. But are you ever going to be able to put this into practice? That's really the difference. So when you have the vision, then you can see yourself in this situation, and you go, wow, I think, there's a way to create this, to make this happen. But then I feel you really have to have that creativity, that think out of the boxness, that you can look at a different way to get something done, as opposed to, well, it always has to be this way because it's always been this way. Maybe there's a different way to look at this. And everyone's not always open to that. So I think having that way of looking at life already opens up some other doors for you. Also, what I've found a lot is, I say, intuition and trust, trusting yourself. Because often, and you may have found that this has happened a lot to you, is you put your ideas out there, and a lot of people will kind of shoot them down, or they'll tell you what's wrong with them.
Why you can't do them.
Yes. Why do you want to do that?
Right.
And if you listen to that, sometimes you could make choices that maybe weren't the best when you look back on them because you didn't really trust and maybe they were right. And you're going in uncharted territory. You don't know what's going to happen. You think you know and you've got the vision, but is this really going to happen? And people telling you it's not or do this instead, sometimes it sounds more credible than what you feel. So that's where the trust, I feel, really has to be there. Mm-hmm. But then I say taking action because nothing's going to happen if we just sit around and think about it. And before that, of course, is making the decision, which can be very difficult to do.
Well, let's step all the way back to the vision stage because one of the things that you just said is about articulating your vision and actually saying it out loud as if you are going to do it as opposed to what if, what do you think about, but instead making the statement of I am in the process of doing X. So do you think that plays a role in that whole process? Because if you're tentative going in, then the intuition can pretty quickly get derailed, and you won't trust your gut.
Yes.
So tell
yes.
us a little bit about the importance of the vision itself.
Yes. The vision is important because you really do have to see yourself in this environment, or see the product that you're creating, or see the service, see people using it. You have to be there. You have to feel it. You have to hunger for it. It has to be real to you, even before it's in the material world. It has to be something that's so strong that there's no way that this is not going to come out, because you want this, you see it, you're living it, you're breathing it. You know, I have that same situation when I write. You know, I'm sure a lot of writers, not necessarily even just nonfiction, any kind of writing where the characters are in your head and they're having conversations and you're seeing the sets, and all of that has to happen first. And usually it does. It starts coming to you, and then you really have to start to put this down. It's the same kind of thing. You know, you feel it, and you're like, I have to do this. And I think the contrast that with daydreaming, we can all daydream, you know, wow, it would be nice if this happened. Wow, it would be nice if I hit the lotto. Well, it would be nice if I did the other thing. But then there's a difference between sitting around and daydreaming, and then it disappears and goes away, and you go back to what you were doing, than to have that really strong vision and seeing yourself in this new situation and knowing, wow, I'm so excited about this, and this is helping propel me forward. Because, you know, as I'm sure that you've experienced, there's times when you're tired and you're like, why did I think of this? This is crazy. I'm exhausted. I want to see the light in the tunnel. Oh, my God. You know, all of that.
Right, right.
And I think the passion is what helps you to just somehow keep going, even when you've hit the wall, even when things don't work out quite the way you wanted. You're like, okay, you know, let's regroup. As you were saying before about doing something different with the companies you're involved in, I feel that passion is what keeps you going, what keeps the person
right.
going who may hit the wall and have the failures and things that didn't work the way they thought, and they're just going to go on anyway, as compared to the person who hits that wall and goes, I'm done, I'm out of here, I'll go back to whatever, and I'm never going to do that again. You know, that I feel
right.
is where you need the passion and the vision to keep you going.
Right. Right, and you're right. Then that does help play into that place of intuition where you do start, you know, testing the components of the dream. And then, you know, once you are encouraged that you actually can do what you want to do and you really believe, then you can move into that place of creativity where you start, you know, actually putting together the recipe for success. So
yes.
So talk to me a little bit about the components of creativity.
Well, creativity is one of those things that at times I've thought either you have it or you don't, which is probably not true, I think. But, you know, sometimes if you're trying to explain a creative way of solving a problem to someone who's just rigidly opposed, you can feel sometimes that maybe that really is true, that people just don't have it. But I disagree. I think everyone has that. They may not be used to using it very often, so they've kind of turned that part of themselves off. But it's a thing of, okay, I want to get this particular product out here, and conventional means I don't know how to do this, or maybe I feel like I don't know the right people. Well, is there a way around this? Maybe I could start asking people, or is there a different way I can create this, or maybe there's someone else I can just ask, and they know someone, and they know someone. Or, you know, maybe things aren't the way I thought. I really thought in order to put this out here, I have to go through this channel and that channel. Maybe it's not even that difficult. Maybe it's a matter of me just asking or looking on the internet and doing some research. You know, it's sometimes you just that little thing that we do differently could make us see so many things differently than we thought they were, you know, because I think we get into a rut of thinking and living, and then we kind of turn off our brains in some way because nothing is new, you know, it's just the same experiences over and over. But when you change your perspective, then you can see, oh, maybe this is something I can do. Maybe this is a different way I can go. You know, so I think that entrepreneurs particularly have to be very resourceful and ready to take those risks. But you are often creating something that doesn't exist yet and maybe never existed, you know. Yeah, you have to think, you have to be willing to put something out there that no one else can see and that maybe seems kind of ridiculous to you at the time.
Right.
But, let's try this and see what happens. you know.
Right. So that actually takes us to the next one, which I think mm-hmm. is actually the big one. And again, I want to stress that even when you're in a company, if you have an idea mm-hmm. to help the company go to the next level, quite often it can look very much like starting your own business.
Yeah.
I did this back mm-hmm. in 1985 within American Airlines, which then the Sabre division that I was employed with was a part of the company. And we were looking at starting a brand new line of business having to do with managing corporate expense reports, which
mm-hmm.
you know today is fairly big business in the technology field. But then it was brand new. And you know I had to put together the business plan internally to convince Bob Crandall, who was then the CEO of American, to give me the $5 million I needed to go out and acquire a little company. And
mm-hmm.
and so this next chapter is Chapter 5, which is about taking risks. And whether you're doing it for yourself or whether you're going to your leadership team and saying, look, we're missing something here and here's something new
mm-hmm.
that we can do, you always have to focus on the downside. And it's I think it's a pretty tricky balancing act to not let it steal your thunder, but particularly if you need to raise money,
mm-hmm.
you have to focus mm-hmm. a lot on the risks because it's mandatory that you articulate that
yes.
in your offering memorandum. So talk to me a little bit about that, Deborah.
The risk part is the part I think that scares a lot of people away from doing anything differently than they've done or than they think people will accept. And a lot of times, you know, I feel in the corporate sector, in terms of, you know, speaking about my own experience, often you may see a different way to do things. I mean, when I was in IT, and we may see a way to solve a major problem and save a lot of money in the company because we were dealing with the corporate book system. And it's like, well, I think if we just did this system differently or I just introduce this new procedure that this could really make a big difference. And there's always going to be the naysayers because a lot of times people have their own agenda, to be honest. You know, they may be afraid that if you come in with this new idea that they're going to be displaced in some way or
right.
something's going to happen that they're going to lose some power. So you're always going to have to step, I think, gingerly depending on the situation you're in, you know, how toxic it may be,
right.
how open the environment is. It's a lot of times you have to use your judgment. But I think that if you come and you really can back it up with some data and some numbers if possible, and you can show how the result of this can be, but also to let them know that, you know, this is the worst that can happen or, you know, if you want to put it that way, but just let them know what we're dealing with. I think just being as transparent as possible. Well, I say that, I understand that in all environments, that's not always, you know, you're not always able to do that with maybe putting your career at some risk at the same time. So to position yourself so that you do have your data up front, you can present it in a way that shows, yes, I know what I'm talking about, and make it clear as to, okay, if we do this, these are the possible scenarios that can happen. You know, I think that's a way that you can put it out there and yet make sure that it's not something where people are like, well, you promised this or we thought that. Well, you know, here it is, and usually documented is even better. This is what
right.
I see, and this is what I think we can achieve, and these are the risks to that. You know, as a business analyst, I did a lot of analyzing systems, and you have to put the risks in the document and let them know, well, if we do this, these are the things that can happen. So that
right.
way there is no real debate. You can see it in black and white. So the matter is now, let's just jump out there. But I think a lot of times people, of course, don't feel that they want to do that if they don't really know what may happen and then the ramifications of that. You know, so I would say lay it out as much as you can and make sure that everybody is on the same page as much as you can. Do that as well, you know, so that way we can
right.
all see the numbers. Sometimes that's what people need to see. They just need to
right.
see those numbers and the data in front of them.
Exactly. And, you know, I asked you earlier what you felt the success traits were, and I found it interesting that you didn't say that an entrepreneur or someone thinking about moving out of a corporate job
mm-hmm.
needs to actually kind of take stock of their not only their own risk-taking
mm-hmm.
Perspective, but if they're married, their spouse. Because I can tell you, I went into my entrepreneurial venture, and again, I'm not talking about when I went out as a consultant, but more when I started the technology company, that, you know, I don't remember asking my husband what his tolerance was going to be. And and at the end of the day, we put literally everything on the line, all the way down to our house and all of our savings, et cetera, as many entrepreneurs do. And, if I had asked him up front, I'm sure he would have said no. But because I just, kind of plowed ahead and did it, he actually pushed himself to a limit that he didn't realize that he could be a risk taker and entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. So, again, mm-hmm. I think if you're doing a mental checklist of whether you can work for yourself, mm-hmm. even as a contractor, I mean, one of the folks who's on the call, had worked for me in the past on a salaried basis. And then as we started this new entrepreneurial company, agreed to be part of the company and was, very instrumental at helping to build the company. And then, of course, when the company didn't succeed, ended up being out of a job. So, each person has to be able to figure out where they're comfortable. And then, again, moving from all of those different things into actually being a consultant where the ebb and flow of money can be months, in between engagements. So all of that is said really to lead into the next chapter, which is about decisions and setting your goals and where you're really going to take this. And I would also interject, from my perspective, the when and the timing. And if you're in a corporate job and moving out, how long do you need to prepare, and what do you need to do financially to get to that place where you're ready? Mm-hmm.
Well, what I did personally was, when I decided that I was going to move out of my regular full-time position and become a contractor, I took about 9 months to do that. And I sat there and I looked at the money. I made my projections as to how much money I was going to need, what could I do now, what bills could I pay off, how could I position myself. Because becoming a contractor at that time, I didn't know what kind of rate I would really get and what was going to happen at that point. So I said, well, I know what I'm getting now. I don't know what's going to happen then. But I can now just take a snapshot of where I'm at and then where I want to be at that time. How much money can I invest or save, or what has to happen? What should be paid off so that when this date rolls around, when I step out of here, I don't have all these things to worry about because they're already taken care of. So for me, I took that amount of time because I felt for me that worked. And, as I mentioned in my experience in the book, is that you really have to make a plan first. You have to say, well, I want to do X. If you can make a plan, some people don't get that luxury because they've lost their position or whatever has taken place, and now they really feel like, wow, okay, what do I do now? But if you have that opportunity, then it's time to sit down and look at where you are, because maybe it's going to take longer for you to make that transition. Maybe you can make it quicker than you think. Or in some cases, and some people that I know, they've started up something while they're working full-time. And everybody's not able to do that. I wasn't, because my hours were so long and my commute to New York City was 4 hours round trip. There was no time for anything else. But for some people, they can do it. So it may be something they can even say, well, I'm going to start this up now and start working on this. And then at some point, let me see where I'm at with the business. Let me see where I'm at with my job. Some people prefer to stay in that situation. They're fine with it. But you really have to be honest, and I don't know if we always want to be. Maybe they always want to look at our financial picture. We don't always want to look at what we really – can we really make this into a real situation for us? Because I think we can get stuck in the dreaming and the hoping and the wishing, and it's really scary to say, yes, I've decided this is it, and this is when I'm going to do it. That takes a lot.
I had an employee years ago when I worked in Atlanta for a major technology provider in the travel industry, and she came to me and told me that she wanted to go out on her own, and would I go to bat for her with HR of actually changing her position from a full-time position into a contract position. And by doing that for her, she was able to parlay that because, you know, we were actually in a role where the work she was doing on a big project was starting to wind down, and she was likely going to have to move into another department in the company anyway. And so it was a real win-win. And, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, individuals don't who are in a corporate job, don't think about that as an option.
That's a good point. And that's true. I know a couple of people who have had their jobs go to part-time, and one of them is a friend of mine who has a couple of young children. So it worked perfectly for her to maintain that status. She really wasn't interested in going back to a full-time, and they, you know, were okay with that. But I think you're right. I think a lot of people don't realize it may be, depending on where they are in their relationship, maybe with management, that this could is something they could find out about. You know, maybe they can do a part-time thing, or they can be a contractor, or there's some other way that they can still work for the company and then do the things that they also want to do as well.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's a really good point, too. I've got another friend who, you know, has been gainfully employed for a couple of years, but is out very, very actively looking. And, you know, I suggested her to her because the folks that she has interviewed with are actually being very, very slow to get back to her. But each time she talks to them, they, you know, they say definitely they're wanting to move ahead. And I suggested this week that she go back to them and see if she could work on a contract basis with them.
Yes.
You know, and do what she does now. And then have, you know, enough income that she would be able to pay for insurance and the other things that quite often people get concerned about. So I think that, like you said, there are so many different ways forward, but it's all about what you talk about in Chapter 7, which is taking action. And actually making the step is, you know, perhaps the hardest. But once you've made it, you know, then it's all about just clearing the way and moving forward, moving through your fear, as you say. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, the taking action part, I think, is a tough one for a lot of us, because that's where we can just get, you know, our foot is poised, you know, to step out, and we're just standing there because we're so afraid of what's going to happen. We put our foot down. Okay, you know, what's going to come at me now? So I think that's really, you know, sometimes I think visioning is the most important trait. Other times I say, well, action is, because nothing's going to happen unless you do something. So the thing is, how much do you really want that? And it sounds almost like a cliche because you hear people say it that way all the time. But I think a lot of times we get to a point where things get so uncomfortable that we have to do something, and that's when we do it. You know, when I took action, I was just so, I could say, fed up, tired, disillusioned with everything, that I said, I have to do something, but I want to do something that makes sense, instead of just, you know, some, you know, I've heard of people resigning, you know, leaving voicemails. They go out for lunch, and I've heard, you know, stories about people quitting at lunch, over lunch, or not coming back the next day because they're just so fed up, but they let themselves get to the point where they can't take it anymore, instead of saying at some point, you know, let's see how I can do this. It makes sense for me, so I'm not just running screaming out the door, you know. So that's why the action part comes in, when you know what you want and you're seeing it, and you have all these other things lined up, and it makes sense. You've looked at it, you researched it, you have everything written down. Then what's really stopping you? Except, you know, we want to know what's going to happen before we do it, and you know, sometimes you just have to step out on faith and know that I've put all this together, I've done the best I can, now I'm going to take this step. So I think a lot of us get stuck with that part, with a lot of decisions, you know, not just business ones, in everyday life. You know, we think and overthink and think again before we do it. So I realized for me that was the key right there, you know, because I've been thinking about leaving as a full-time corporate person for a couple of years before I did.
Right.
I've been thinking about it, I've been looking into it, but I never took action.
Right.
You know, so I realized, wow, that was the key. That was the thing that maybe makes the difference between a lot of people who sit around and maybe complain and those that finally say, yes, I'm going to do this. You know, it's
right.
really just taking that first step is really so important.
Well, and this woman that I met with for lunch today, you know, one of the things I was telling her is that, you know, your dream may be ahead of its time. And
mm-hmm.
and you also need to be respectful of the timing of your dream. Because in her case, she is wanting to go out and build a company, you know, that does meeting planning. And in a very unique and specific way. But I said, you know, right now, if it were me, I would wait until after the 2012 election because our economy is going to be incredibly volatile until after the next inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to take a look. And since I have been ahead of my time so many times in different ventures, both inside, you know, that very first venture I talked about, you know, even though we moved ahead and I got the funding to acquire the company and we built out the technology, the business, even within American Airlines, didn't succeed. And I had to lay off, you know, 90 people. But the idea wasn't bad and the vision wasn't wrong. It was just the wrong time. There were no PCs on the desktop in corporations. So, you know, how could you do automated expense reporting? It was actually pretty nuts. But, you know, I think taking a look at your idea and seeing how sustainable it is and what those factors are that are going to impact it are really, really important. So once you do step out, and again, whether it's inside a company to start something new or you're going out on your own, how do you stay motivated?
Well, that is the tricky part. and also to speak to what you mentioned about being ahead of your time, I can remember a kind of tablet PC when I was back in AT&T. And I believe people used a stylus with it. I don't think it was something that was like touch. And it came out, and a few of the people had it, because in our IT department, you know, you have a lot of early adopters. But it really fizzled out, and to be honest, I can't remember the name.
Yeah, the Newton.
Yes,
there
wasn't
a whole bunch of them.
Yeah. Something, wasn't something like this out before? But it was ahead of the time, ahead of the curve. People weren't ready for this yet. So that's such a great point that you've made, that sometimes you have that right idea, but maybe it's not the time for it, or maybe it's not, you know, really the idea for you to put out there. Maybe it's something that might be best if you license it and have sold it or someone else is going to be implementing it. Sometimes you never know. I think entrepreneurs get lots of great ideas, you know, but unfortunately we can't chase after them all. So who knows? Maybe they're just ideas that other people can really use and we can benefit from in that way. But, you know, I just wanted to make that point. But the motivation is the part that is the tough part, I think, because once we get to a point where we're feeling good about what we're doing and we have the vision, we're going to have those tough times as well. And what I do is I read a lot of books. I listen to a lot of different recordings and things that help me to stay focused and involved with positive people or people you can vent with sometimes and who will vent to you, and you can kind of, you know, share some ideas or brainstorm or just even, you know, someone else who gets what you're going through. And it's the ongoing thing that once you've made this decision now, in a sense, you can say, well, I'll always go back or I can go back. You know, it's like someone who loses weight and keeps all their old clothes in the closet. It's almost like, well, you know, if you're going to move forward, you have to kind of like burn everything behind you and just say, this is the way I'm going to live from now on. So in that case, often we're going to have to change how we live, change how we think, change how we look at the world. As an employee, maybe you're looking at the world in a totally different way, that you're not the one who's jumping out there and taking risks alone. You know, you may be part of a structure. Maybe you're not really the risk-taking person. You know, someone else is doing that, and then you're part of, you know, the structure that helps implement something. But once you're out there yourself, and it can get really lonely out there by yourself, I think we really have to change how we do things. And if that means in the morning you have to have some kind of ritual that you meditate or you pray or you exercise or you do something that helps you to stay in a certain mindset if maybe mm-hmm. you just surround yourself with people who are positive and helpful and supportive,
right.
you know, and people who tell you the truth, you know, it may
yeah,
mean changing
exactly.
a lot of things you're currently doing. And also, I think that something I don't think it's mentioned a lot is more self-care, you know, because everything I went through in corporate, I wasn't taking care of myself physically. I was always either working, eating some really cheesy food, or, you know, maybe sleeping at midnight and jumping up again to go. Self-care becomes important because you are the company. And even if you have other people working for you, if you're at the core of this thing, you have to have it together. You know, you have to have your mind right, your body right. It becomes more important, I think. So especially I think women, a lot of times we don't always pay attention to that for ourselves. So I feel it has to become a new way of living, unless you've always been that way, and that's wonderful.
Right.
But a lot of us haven't been that
right,
way.
Right, right.
You know, we haven't been in a way that now we have to put the tools in place so that our mindset, because that is really key to everything.
Right.
Mindset, what you think about, what you believe is possible. We have to put the tools in place so that we are always generating this mindset that's going to help us. And when things don't go the way we want and we can't lay there for months, you know, crying about it, we have to be able to get back up again and go on. But if you don't have those support systems in place, it gets harder and harder to do that.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, some people, I know I have heard people who try to leave corporate so that they will actually have more time for themselves, and then they find out that the entrepreneurial grind can actually take a lot more hours. So
yeah.
I really echo
yes.
the whole notion of taking care of yourself and really finding a mentor. You talked about somebody who's going to be honest. You know, someone who has enough experience and perspective to help guide you to success.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be your best friends. You know, I have a number of people that are close to me, but they don't necessarily have the business experience to give me, you know, the correct direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've sought out a number of mentors, and they're all different. Quite unusually, and those who are on the call today know that normally I would surround myself with women, but it's odd that my three business mentors are men, and former, you know, very very senior executives, you know, who've worked with large companies who can you know, help on a lot of fronts. And I, you know, whether it's finding men or finding women or just joining the egg call to get, you know, to get input and inspiration each week, I think that one is probably the most key for my success of staying motivated. So what would be the one thing that if you could only give one piece of advice to someone who, you know, either it has some unease of where they are right now and, you know, they don't know whether they just want to start something new within their company or they want to go out, what would be the one thing that you would tell them?
I think if they're not sure, and it's easy not to be sure because, as you said, when people come out of that environment, sometimes they think, oh, it's going to be better, but then they don't realize the challenges that happen. I would say certainly if you can set an appointment to meet with someone who is already doing it, lunch date, coffee, someone who you can just sit down and chat with and see what they're about, how they got started, or listen in to these type of recordings. Or I think it's better if you try to make contact with a person who is doing it. Then you can get what I call the real deal on it, and you'll know, okay, this is what's involved, and this is what I've been through, and, you know, this is how I overcame these things. So that you can look at that and look at your own life and what you need in your life right now and say, does this really fit into how I want to live right now or not? You know, I think the best way is just to go straight to the people who are doing it and find out what their experiences have been. And that's something I didn't do, and I wish I had, because I didn't think to do that. You know, I was
right.
kind of in a bubble. In that world, I knew people who were working and had a business, but I really didn't know a lot of people who were actually out there. So that's something I would have gone back and done if I could do it over again, just to get their perspective on it and understand, okay, this is really what's involved. You know, I think that it doesn't hurt for us to ask, and a lot of times we don't always do that. but we should ask and find out straight from the people doing it.
Great, great. Well, it has been a pleasure to have you on. Deborah, can you let folks know how they can best get a hold of you?
Yes, my website is www.dbaileycoach.com. You can also reach me at contact@dbaileycoach.com, and I have a blog, womenentrepreneursecrets.blogspot.com, that has information, articles of interest to women entrepreneurs, and also I post information about my internet radio show there. So those are a couple of places you can find me.
Great. Well, thank you again for joining us. And again, your book is called Think Like an Entrepreneur. And is the book already out?
Yes, it's on Amazon.com, and
it's
available for Kindle as well.
Okay, well, great. Well, it is also on our Executive Girlfriends group book site then. I had just an electronic copy, I wasn't sure whether it was out yet. So, again, Deborah, thank you so much, and please feel free to join us any Friday. We have a call every single Friday. Next week, our author guest is Lois Frankel, and she wrote a book called Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office 101, Unconscious Mistakes Women Make That Sabotage Their Careers. So, again, we are going to turn off the recorded portion of the call now, and we have some time of just catching up with each other. So, again, Deborah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay.